Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for coming along to the inaugural half-year presentation of ActiveOps as we become get used to being a public company. In the next half an hour or so, I will run through our update from the first half of the year, covering essentially the financials, but also the general outlook for the business. And I know there's time for questions at the end, so hopefully we'll be welcome any views or perspective you may have. So just cracking straight into the business, and I'm conscious that, as ever, as a new company, a quick reminder of what we are. We're fundamentally a SaaS company with some training installation revenues, and we operate globally in three principal regions: Europe, Middle East, and South Africa, and then the North America business and the Australia business. As you can see, some of the key stats on the left there, it's about 19, 20 million ARR, and we operate through deliver our products to ourselves, but also through a number of key partners. And in terms of the value proposition, what we do is we give organizations, large enterprises, banks, insurance companies, BPOs, that service those types of companies, we give them better control over their fundamentals of how they deliver their services. And this graphic on the screen here just quickly summarizes that. Essentially, the challenge for these sorts of enterprises is they have siloed resources, which are therefore very subject to the vagaries or the ebbs and flows of workload. And that drives essentially leakage of value, loss of capacity, because productivity is very driven by the presenting workload. And using ActiveOps' software, which is these two core products of WorkIQ and ControliQ, and the data we provide on the back of that, which is the Ops Index, embedded with our very clearly established best practice, you get the outcome of organizations being able to leverage their capacity better. So the productivity on the bottom left-hand side there is essentially an outcome of better management of your capacity. The impact of that is very significant in lots of ways. It gives a cost improvement, but actually in the days of digital and increasingly diverse operations with more and more work being done by robots and automation, it gives organizations the stability and capability to exploit those sorts of technologies. So that's really what we're seeing in terms of the market. We've had a very good half year. I think a lot of that is to do with the rising awareness of a lot of the established practices for managing the challenges of working capacity are proving to be quite challenged, and it's putting better operations management onto a lot of agendas in the way as a strategic issue. And for those of you who've seen us or listened to some of the presentations I've given over the last 6 months leading from the IPO, we were very clear on how we see this driving the business. I think the interesting piece is then the one on the right, because one thing's for sure, on the sort of post-pandemic phase, there is no real clarity about the sort of where we're heading to, which again, to us, plays to, you know, when organizations aren't clear on their strategy and the deployment resources, the one thing they can work on is their agility. And I think that continues to sort of play to us. And I'll talk more about some of the impacts in some of our more mature markets about how we're presenting our roadmap to our customers and the outcome of doing that. So then, just to talk then about the headline figures, and I'll defer to Paddy in a minute for more of the detailed view, but fundamentally, we had a very strong half year. The key metrics across the range of activities are all going in the right direction. But also, more importantly, the underlying, if you like, activity of the business, new business logos across regions, a slight regional variation in the sense of North America. It's a more growth market for us. And the good thing there is we've been very successfully cross-selling the new product WorkIQ, which we acquired through Open Connect 2 years ago, into the established base there. And that's important because, firstly, we've had to tackle 10 different issues because it's fundamentally an on-premise solution. So there's the whole process of becoming an embedded part. Then secondly, there's the value proposition. Does it add to what we already offer? And the good news there is it's adding an awful lot. So the actual value proposition we can now take to other customers to say this client is using this software in conjunction with our other software and they're getting amplified results is a very powerful one. I think the other significant thing about that is it's the scope. For every one customer that would be on the core ControliQ product, we reckon three customers, there's a need for sort of three customers for the WorkIQ product. So it extends the range of types of work that our software can help organizations manage. So that's an important one in North America. In Europe, Middle East and Africa, it's just busy. New logos, lots of activity, very strong pipeline. It seems to be much less lag, if you like, from the COVID uncertainty. So the European end of the business had a real gangbusters Q2, which given our financial reporting is April to March, typically quarter two can be quite slow because it runs over the summer period. Absolutely not the case. So very, very pleased with the activity now happening in Europe. And then finally, Australia. The interesting thing about Australia, which has always been a very strong market for ActiveOps, it's a very mature market with ActiveOps as a solution embedded in most of the larger banks over there. You will have seen in the RNS, despite the fact that they've been with us for many years, like National Australia Bank have been with us since 2003, typically we go through an annual renewal cycle. What they've doing, because I think of an increasing need for managed resources as a strategic issue, they've been putting us through the ringer a bit around our kind of strategic roadmap. And the outcome of that has been moving from 1 year to a 3 year deal, which is for me less about the renewal certainty. It is absolutely to do with endorsement of our technological pathway. You know, they do see us as key partners, and that is important because in many ways Australia for us is at the cutting edge, if you like, of this topic around the world. So that's been some very positive outcome. Overall, I think there's a number of things as an outcome of the year. In terms of where we've been focusing, overall, we're still investing in the business, and Paddy will probably speak in a minute about the economics of our EBIT and so on, but fundamentally, we're still investing across the range of activities of the business. So that's accelerating our development capacity. We've completely replatformed our ControliQ product, and that's creating opportunities to link much more specifically into the other organizational ecosystems, like around Anaplan or ServiceNow or the other kind of elements of the technology roadmap inside these enterprises, and that creates new opportunities. We're particularly excited about the link with Microsoft. We're fundamentally a Microsoft Azure software platform, which means our large enterprise clients get significant incentives to buy related Azure client services such as ourselves. So we're getting a real positive movement because essentially Microsoft, our salespeople are incentivized to sell and support our sales of our product. And that, I think, will have an increasing gearing effect in the months and years to come. We're investing in our sales and customer support because if you take one of the key stats, our top 10 customers, the use of our ARR grew by 32%, which is, again, obviously the bedrock of the business because history shows we expand across our new accounts very systematically. And I think what the half year has demonstrated is that is still sort of absolutely the bedrock of the business. So I'm very keen about that. But on the back of that, I think the expansion opportunities, especially with the new software to extend, is very, very significant. So some of the investment is in direct sales, new business, but actually much more of it is in the senior client execs to help develop and expand our footprint within our existing customers. And not all of that on the back of some really good areas of product development supporting effectively hybrid working. So a lot going on and a lot of very positive activities for the business. And I've touched on the different regional aspects, but you know, the nice thing is we're a multi-legged business. We aren't dependent on sort of performance in any one region, and that strength is really, really seeing us through. So the overall message of us coming to the market is, I think, probably no surprises. But as I sit here today, certainly looking back over the half year, I'm pleased with the where we are at, and certainly as I look forward, I think there's a lot to be excited about. So that's my quick summary. But I'll let Paddy you pick up a bit on some of the details of the figures.
Thank you, Richard, and. Just firstly, focusing on the SaaS model that we've got in the business and the annual recurring revenue. As Richard said, you know, very strong growth in our top 10 customers there at 32% and overall a 16% increase in our ARR to 19.8 million. And those top 10 also now taking a larger proportion of the total there at 58%. And the other really strong metric that we've got is our net revenue retention. So the growth of our existing customers over the same period last year, and that's at 110%. And we've seen expansion across our customers in all regions and with good growth in both ControliQ and WorkIQ. And so a very positive story on the ARR picture. If I just move on to the P&L, SaaS revenue, that's accelerated to 12% growth. And that's a result of that strong second half that Richard has talked about. And then the T&I revenue has recovered significantly versus the first half of last year. Of course, the first half of last year was COVID and things weren't quiet, but so very strong growth and back to normal levels that we were seeing pre-COVID, which is encouraging. And associated with that, we've got an impact on gross margin. So the revenue mix has driven an overall gross margin decrease of 1 percentage point. But then if you break out the SaaS margin, that's improved a small amount to 85% in line with what you expect to see at a SaaS business. And within the T&I training and implementation revenues, very strong margin improvement up to 56%. And that's a result of the implementations we've done in high margin regions and with some strong customers who are looking for our dedicated support in those implementations, as well as the fact that most of those deliveries are still being done from home remotely. And that gives us a stronger efficiency of our delivery team, as well as no travel or hotel expenses and so on, as if they were on site previously. So margins looking very, very solid. Richard talked about the investment in sales and the account execs and driving retention and growth in our existing customers, as well as the tech and development spend. That spend came in towards the back end of the first half of the year, and we'll obviously have the full impact of that in the second half of the year. So whilst we're broadly break even in the first half, we do expect to move to a loss-making position for the full year. And that's a result of that spend coming through and the full six-month impact that we'll see in the rest of the year. And then just below the EBITDA margin line, only thing really to point out there is that the net interest charge has dropped away following the repayment of the loan that we had as part of the acquisition of Open Connect a couple of years ago. That loan was repaid in October last year, so interest charging fallen away. If I then move on to the cash flow and balance sheet, so the balance sheet remains very strong, over 10 million of cash in the bank, all the debt repaid, as I said. The cash flow is worth a couple of minutes because you'll see there's a one-off impact in that of 3.5 million payment related to the IPO and the exercise of share options and the associated taxes that various people had on those. We received that cash into the business prior to the year end. We paid it on to the tax authorities in early April, and hence a significant one-off in the numbers. But we also see a negative cash flow in the first half of the year, and that's typical for what we have experienced in prior years. So no surprises from our perspective on that. We do expect that to recover in the second half, and that's as a result of our bidding cycle and our renewal cycle with our existing accounts, and the fact that the second half of the year for sales is generally strong, or has previously been strong, so that cash balance is expected to build as those annual in advance invoices are raised and paid before the year end by our customer base, such that we return to a positive cash flow conversion against EBITDA for the rest of the year. And as you can see, we've made good progress on that in October with over £2 million coming into the business as a result of that timing on the invoicing cycle. So that's the numbers that we see for the first half. I'm now going to pass back to Richard to have a look at the strategy and sales opportunity.
Thanks, Paddy. So I think overall, the continuing impact of COVID is just creating a sense of awareness. I think a lot of the established practices for managing capacity and work, which sounds utterly mundane, but it's really been challenged for a lot of organizations. And so that need to now get better leverage out of capacity when it's not necessarily sitting in sheds and sitting in offices is just coming through very, very strongly. And you're seeing that coming through in you know, highlighting a couple of things here in the analysts. So whether it's Forrester or Omnia, the one that was particularly key was this IDC report. And they highlight the fact that if you think about one of the other things in the market around lean business processes and, you know, applying lean to minimize, if you like, contingency and capacity in processes to make them more efficient, the effect of that is to make organizations very brittle. I think there is a growing recognition that whilst, you know, lean itself is at reducing costs, you still have to manage the volatility. And IDC did a really good piece around that. And that's, of course, absolutely ActiveOps' sort of sweet spot. Because what we give organizations is that capability to manage their overall work and time in a more systematic way. So you don't have to carry lots of siloed resources. You can and effectively manage that as a collective. And so I think the context for our side, the solution, is only growing. And we're seeing that coming through in terms of the Australian sort of maturity of the strategic roadmap I talked about, but also in terms of the sort of presenting need, either in terms of North America. I mean, the cross-sell of WorkIQ was because the organization there wanted greater visibility to support the well-being agenda. They were concerned that people working in remote locations were working extended hours, and that kind of visibility was an important part of the process. And you know, the stories are different in different places, but there is just that rising awareness need for better management or using technology to support better management of work and time. So I think the overall context for our product is only getting stronger. And that's important because classically in our environment, they're quite a sophisticated sell. You know, we have to make people more aware of the impact of a problem to present our solution. So that's quite helpful. I think in terms of our focus, it remains what you will have heard from me before. You know, our catchment is this banks and insurers and the American healthcare market in particular, where, if you like, the cost of labor, the efficiency of labor is such a fundamental driver of the service people receive, their capacity to meet their sort of shareholder expectations. But also the big one, and particularly for banks, is operational risk. evidence to third parties, whether it's a regulator or other suppliers or other customers, evidence that you're in control. And that's very hard when your back office is a bit of a black box. And again, ActiveOps is very strong at that. So our differentiation remains that focus on that particular business problem around the back office. And it's our credibility about being effectively the leading player in the world on this topic. We have the most developed solution. We have the most developed methodology. And importantly, now I think we've got the technology roadmap and the integration piece to support that. So, there's a lot happening, and certainly the teams around the world are very busy. Against that, you've still got the noise of the pandemic. You've still got the noise of selling to large enterprises is messy, complex, and difficult. And when you've got multiple stakeholders, so none of this is easy. But it's a more sort of supportive environment right now. And again, just to emphasize, I think the value of our linkage with Microsoft is really coming through. So that presence in at the CIO level of their sort of the relationships they enjoy, through which we can leverage our own sort of service and part of that sort of in central ecosystem of these large enterprises is really changing. And I'm quite excited about that in terms of the outlook. So moving on to the H2 outlook, I mean, the trend is continuing. We've picked up another really good customer in South Africa, which is interesting because that market itself has been fairly flat for a few years. And I think there's a lot of activity warming up there. The expansion rate, 32% growth in our core top 10 customers over the last year, I think is the outstanding statistic of our results in the half. Clearly, that is something that's the bedrock of the business. And the fact that it's continuing is great. I think this significance of the term, moving to these three-year deals, that's testament not so much to the low level of churn. I don't think that's changed. That's still the same. It's the endorsement of the strategic roadmap for the product and what we are doing, I think, is a really good thing. So, you take all that together as I sit here now, looking forward to the end of the year. We've sort of indicated, I think we're confident of reaching and possibly exceeding our sort of expectations. So, as you might expect, as a fairly new company to the public markets, we're not wanting to do anything that causes any great surprises right now. But in terms of the progress we've made in the last year, the last half year, I think it's been really good. And certainly as a team, we're very pleased with both the process of coming onto the market, the impact it's having on us as a commercial organization, and certainly our ability to deliver what we promised to our investors. I think the confidence is very high. So I think that's my piece, but I'm very keen to have and answer any questions. So perhaps we can open up the floor.
We've got a question from Kai Korshell from Canaccord Genuity.
Good morning. Just a couple, really. The first one was around how we should think about normalized growth rates going forward. So I think your AR grew at 16%, and I think the TNI sales are sort of at a 4 million run rate. Just curious how much has just benefited from the COVID comps last year, and the question is really is sort of how should we think about the growth of both of these elements in your top line sort of beyond once we've normalized for the COVID impact. That was the first question, and then the second one was really around some of the larger enterprise SaaS software platforms. You mentioned some of them you have APIs with, Workday or ServiceNow, and the trend there has been that they keep adding new modules to their product stack to keep growing at 20-30%. So I guess my question is, how do you see the coexistence with some of these larger platforms? Is there a risk that at some point they launch their own MPA or EPM solutions, or how do you think that about that issue? Thank you.
Thanks, Doug. And So taking the second one, we have a very specific domain expertise, and I think that's sustained us very well. I mean, clearly the value and what we have is a benefit focus, and we have that kind of constituent customer base, which effectively has built up our repertoire. So to that extent, the sort of threat of competitive modules in certain areas, it has always been there. I think our differentiation remains our kind of the fact that we sit essentially above those the transactional systems, and obviously the onus on us is therefore to leverage that position to do something that is fairly unique. So whilst I mean that we have a number of competitors out there in terms of other organisations, probably more in the workforce management space, the traditional contact centre types, but we've managed to sustain that over many years and frankly, we're doing better at the moment than not. So I think we're okay with that. The going back to your first question, and Paddy chip in as well, but I mean, clearly the comps on last year, particularly about T&I, are just, you know, are exceptional. I think the basic answer to your question is we see a return to our historical growth rates. That would be, and so to that extent, if you look back over ActiveOps history, there's no reason to believe, you know, mid-teens growth is the norm, and I think that's the general outlook. I mean, that would be on the overall revenues, but certainly the SaaS AR T&I training and implementation. We're budgeting for, and we plan on, you know, continuing element of that, but we don't see that in a linear growth because we see the value to us in scalability is to develop and nurture our ecosystem partners to pick up that. I don't see it dropping away altogether, but the actual rate of growth of our T&I, I think, will be lower. But that's going to be more a strategic policy thing rather than a constraint. We could do the work, but actually I think it's healthier for the business to lay it off to third parties.
And if I could add just to that, Richard, just in terms of the T&I revenue, it is a variable metric just simply around the way that we install with our customers or implement with our customers. If we get a customer who wants the full fat version of us implementing, then we're going to get very strong T&I revenues and margins as a result of that, as you've seen in the first half. If we use partners or if we are in a low-cost jurisdiction, we still get the good SaaS growth, but the T&I revenues can be lower as a result of that. So, you know, we're back to pre-COVID levels, as we said, and as Richard said, we don't see that necessarily scaling in the same way as the SaaS revenues.
That's great. Thank you very much. And congratulations.
And we'll go to Kevin Ashton from Singer Capital Markets.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I've got two newbie questions for you, if that's all right. So the first one, you mentioned your customer base of over 80 customers. But can you give us some detail on the split there between workforce automation and EPM and any overlap? I'm obviously thinking about cross-sell. And then I have another question, if that's okay.
So the core business is the workforce is our Control IQ product. Yeah. So it's predominantly I would call it not EPM. EPM is even as a descriptor is fairly new, and Gartner only really coined it 18 months ago. And for us, it's a rather imperfect description of one aspect of it. So there is a rising awareness of need for better visibility over time and work, and that's, you know, that's our control, the WorkIQ product. But the 80 customers are for our enterprise Control IQ product. That, and then we have probably, you know, three or four substantial WorkIQ products, most of which we inherited from OpenConnect when we bought it. But now we are cross selling. So the second point in your question is then the cross sell. Now. The good thing there, I say, that the WorkIQ, let's call it EPM technology, is its addressable community is just so much larger. So if you take a bank, which we would sell to, we would typically reckon about 14 to 18% of the workforce would be suitable for our Control IQ product because they're the core sort of back office. And then there's the vast majority of other roles within our organization which wouldn't necessarily be suitable for Control IQ. Whereas the WorkIQ product is much more a visibility over work and time, and that itself has probably got at least three times the catchment. So the exciting thing from my point of view is if we, with the evidence coming through of the 2+2=5, with the two software products in conjunction coming out of our North America enterprise customer we sold to recently and another one in South Africa, that gives me a fantastic sort of sales proposition to then take to our, you know, 80 or so enterprise customers to say, you really need the WorkIQ product as well.
Okay, now that actually puts it in perspective. Thank you very much. And then the second question is, when you talked about, 750 million potential market from existing clients. I think the other number that you mentioned in the admission document was 70 million. And I can't remember exactly how you described that, but it was, but I'm kind of keen on focusing on the 70 million, if that's appropriate. Just where that number comes from, right. You know, how much is, I don't know, new versus existing. I would have thought new, but kind of asked you that, and how many touch points you have with this 70 million ARR. If that, it's kind of a pipeline question, I guess. But anyway, just general background would be interesting.
So just to explain the maths on that, as you say, part of the emissions information was the 750 is our assessment. If you take the top 250 banks or organizations with whom we'd like to talk to and look at their size of their, if you like, our addressable community within that, which is my sort of 14 or 18%, depending, that comes up with a target catchment. So this is the sort of within the Anglophile sort of, so our segment of a market within which who are the people we want to trust, that's the 750 million market, right? So it's a kind of market sizing, target addressable within our kind of sweet spot. You then come back to our existing customer base, and the 70 million is a really interesting stat, because that is what we've done is take our customers, look at with whom we already have contracts with, and say, taking the same maths, look at their workforces. So take a large outsourcer, for example, with whom we have a good contract with, but they are quite a federalized organization, but they are very, very large indeed. So but you can still do the maths on what's our sort of addressable. So the 70 is the projected revenue possible if we sold to the full estate of our existing customer base. So there's no new business, new logo in there. That's just an estimate of our target addressable within our existing customer base. So that's a really positive number, because, and it's evidenced by, I mean, if you look at our expand sales last year, the key stat, which is one that sort of really does underpin my confidence for the future, is this 32% growth in our top 10 customers, because that's getting after that 70 million.
Okay, well, that's impressive. And I guess the other question was, but I mean, you don't disclose pipeline or anything, but you've obviously got touch points with these people because you're there. But I don't know, is pipeline something that you monitor internally? Is it something you can talk about qualitatively, if not quantitatively?
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, one of the investments we're making, for example, is our account executives. And because exactly to that. I mean, if you think about our revenue security, right? Priority one, keep your existing customers. Priority two, expand your existing customers. And priority three is acquiring a steady stream of new logos. So we mentioned five new logos. Now, those five new logos will not deliver a great deal of ARR, certainly in the first year, but actually in quantum, even in the second year, it's getting after the new and then expanding those. But that critical bit in the middle of growing that estate of usage within an existing customer is just the sort of lifeblood of the company. And so our pipeline, we have account plans and target addressable. It's I'm not going to give you any stats on the actual size of the pipeline other than the one we've just discussed already. But one thing that's interesting is it is very different, for example, to expand in what you might describe as a very federalized. Let's take an outsourcer, which has a very, very sort of segmented customer base. Actually, it's almost like a new sale to cross across to a different accounts, even though intrinsically it's leverage. Whereas what we're having a real purple patch with, particularly in the UK and some of the big banks that would be well known to you, but we're not sort of disclosing, but we're growing strongly in those because fundamentally they're the same business. So once we've established our provenance and the value, there's only greater good by more and more people coming onto the platform. So pipeline in that sense is absolutely something we manage, and we target our resources clearly on the areas where we think we're going to get we've got the biggest yield. And if we can sustain the 32% growth in that area, that's good. And then you add in the cross sell, because that 32% really hasn't come from, no, that's not quite true, the North America was, but the large majority of that 32 is coming from expansion of our existing product, not cross sell. Yeah. So as we get cross sell working, I think that will be a big driver as well.
Brilliant. Okay, well, that's really helpful, and congratulations on your successful IPO.
Thank you. I'll talk about that in 3 or 4 years' time, but it certainly is not something, against the different choices we had over the last 18 months, it's certainly feeling on the right thing to do. So, thanks for that.
No problem. Thank you.
And a question from Kimberly Carstens from FinCap. Are you experiencing any staffing pressure in sales and marketing or in your development teams? And what potential effect does that have on non-growth focused increases in OPEX? We're hearing some extraordinary stories of salary inflation for techies in particular.
Interesting. We've grown our tech a lot in this last year. I think we quote in some of the decks, we've had a 60% expansion in our core sort of new tech build around Control IQ, for example. In actual fact, the impact of COVID in some ways has been positive, because whereas before I would have probably been prioritizing recruitment of tech around Reading and the Thames Valley, what we now have is the capability to recruit pretty much anywhere in the UK, because the team operating model now is spread. So specifically around that, the answer is no, we haven't. We are seeing some pressure, particularly in the US, on sales salaries. And as a new business, when you're nurturing, or new presence, let's say, you're nurturing talent, you know, the loss of one or two key people can have quite a hard habit, you know, quite an impact. You sort of reset. It's not when you've got a team of 20, losing one or two is less impactful. So there's a risk there. But touch wood, I think the opportunities and what we've been able to place has not been, has not been too difficult. Another issue for us, just on that topic of resourcing, though, is the different delivery model. I mean, as you can imagine, many of the people that in the training and implementation side of our business are used to going out on client sites. That's their history. That's what they like doing. And actually, we're recognizing quite a difference now as people get used to delivering by you know, screen and Teams and Zoom and so on. So there are some dynamics to the business. But to go to the core of the questions, fortunately, and I touch wood, I wouldn't say we've suffered anything that I'd describe as out of the ordinary in terms of our ability to resource the business. Again, Paddy, I'm just trying to give any particular colour on that, but anything?
Yeah, no, I'd agree. As you say, a little bit of pressure on a couple of areas in the US on sales and tech side, but fundamentally, we've, as you say, expanded the tech team in the last 6 months or so, and we've been able to hire the resources and skill levels that we've been looking for at what we would consider, you know, appropriate salaries. So, you know, nothing out of the ordinary to note there from my side.
We have created the capability. We've taken on a relationship with a third party for sort of surge capacity out of one of the sort of Eastern European based you know, technical teams, but that's very much the sort of surge capacity rather than sort of core development. So and that's just proving quite a flexible and valuable resource. So that's something we've done to try and mitigate some of that risk, so that we do have access to more immediate resources for projects or specific needs.
Thank you. And a final question, unless any more come in. Your Open Connect acquisition was clearly successful. Are there any other areas of your product development roadmap where M&A may play a part?
Interesting. I mean, Open Connect was a huge thing for us. And if they could do one of those every year, then that would be great. But I think that the underlying point I would make is that, you know, we are very focused about what we do. And if there's opportunities to advance our roadmap through acquisitions, absolutely. But you know, it could be the criteria we have are quite tight about when we consider these things. Because it could be technology and roadmap. And if that's an opportunity to accelerate development, which we would want to do, but we can effectively bring it forward, possibly depending on the business, obviously with a revenue stream attached, well that would be that's going to be a good thing to do. And I mean, we would look at that. But it's also sort of market access as well. In the case of the Open Connect, one of the reasons it proved well, it gave us a very good, strong sort of basis of client with whom we client base to work from in the US. So there's more than just product roadmap. But I think we're pretty disciplined internally about against its sort of it's amplifying, accelerating our own strategy rather than looking for sort of diversity and risk diverse you know, spreading risk that wouldn't really be a logic for it. So there's another aspect of being on the public market. Does it give us the means to do things? And certainly it's a new area of look for us, but. You know, it would have to be for very specific reasons.
Many thanks. And that's the end of questions. Richard, do you have any closing remarks?
For us, this is a bit of a, as you know, our inaugural year. I'm hoping the information we've given has been useful, but more importantly, it's no surprises. I mean, that's the thing for us at the moment is to be, I guess, very clear on what we're doing and conveying that sort of sense of focus this business has, but also really our confidence in the future without essentially overreaching ourselves. So it's been a very good half year, and you know, we're sort of as a team pretty pumped up for where we're heading. So that's good. Thank you.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.